Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the best among the exalted devotees. So we'll read the chapter summary. And of course, this is the last chapter in this section, in this unit. This chapter describes how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nrisimhadev, disappeared after pleasing Prahlad Maharaj. It is also described a benediction given by Lord Shiva. Lord Nrisimhadev wanted to bestow benedictions upon Prahlad Maharaj one after another, but Prahlad Maharaj, thinking them impediments on the path of spiritual progress, did not accept any of them. Instead, he fully surrendered at the Lord's lotus feet. He said, "If anyone engaged in the devotional service the Lord prays for personal sense gratification, he cannot be called a pure devotee or even a devotee. He may be called only a merchant engaged in the business of give and take. Similarly, a master who wants to please his servant after taking service from him is also not a real master." Prahlad Maharaj therefore did not ask anything from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, he said that if the Lord wanted to give him a benediction, he wanted the Lord to assure him he would never be induced to take any benediction for the sake of material desires. Exchanges of devotional service for lusty desires are always very prominent. As soon as lusty desires awaken, one's senses, mind, life, soul, religious principles, patience, intelligence, shyness, beauty, strength, memory, and truthfulness are all vanquished. One can render unalloyed devotional service only when there are no material desires in one's mind. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was greatly pleased with Prahlad Maharaj for his unalloyed devotion, yet the Lord provided him one material benediction, that he would be perfectly happy in this world and live his next life in Vaikuntha. The Lord gave him the benediction that he would be the king of this material world until the end of the Manvantara millennium, and that although in this material world he would have the facility to hear the glories of the Lord and depend fully on the Lord, performing service to him in uncontaminated bhakti yoga. The Lord advised Prahlad to perform sacrifices through bhakti yoga, and this is the duty of a king. Prahlad Maharaj accepted whatever the Lord had offered him, and he prayed for the Lord to deliver his father. In response to this prayer, the Lord assured him that in the family of such a pure devotee as he, not only the devotee's father, but his forefathers for 21 generations are liberated. The Lord also asked Prahlad to perform the ritualistic ceremonies appropriate after his death. Then Lord Brahma, who was also present, offered many prayers to the Lord, expressing his obligation to the Lord for having offered benedictions to Prahlad Maharaj. The Lord advised Lord Brahma not to offer benedictions to asuras as he had to Hiranyakasipu, for such benedictions indulge them. Then Lord Nrisimhadev disappeared. On that day, Prahlad Maharaj was installed on the throne of the world by Lord Brahma and Sukracharya. Thus, Narada Muni described the character of Prahlad Maharaj for Yudhisthira Maharaj, and he further described the killing of Ravana by Lord Ramchandra and the killing of Sishupal and Dantavakra in Dwapara Yuga. Sishupal, of course, had merged in the existence of the Lord and thus achieved Sayuja Mukti. Narada Muni praised Yudhisthira Maharaj because the Supreme Lord Krishna was the greatest well-wisher and friend of the Pandavas and almost always stayed in their house. Thus the fortune of the Pandavas was greater than that of Prahlad Maharaj. Later, Narada Muni described how the demon Maya Danava constructed Tripura for the demons, who became very powerful and defeated the demigods. Because of this defeat, Lord Rudra, Shiva, dismantled Tripura. Thus he became as famous as Tripurari. For this, Rudra is very much appreciated and worshipped by the demigods. This narration occurs at the end of the chapter. So, verse 1 from chapter 10. The saint Narada Muni continued, although Prahlad Maharaj was only a boy, when he heard the benedictions offered by Lord Nrisingadev, he considered them impediments on the path of devotional service. Thus he smiled very mildly and spoke as follows. So Srila Prabhupada points out that material achievements are not the ultimate goal of devotional service. The ultimate goal of devotional service is love of Godhead. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions that great Raja Rishis, devotee kings, although very opulent, they accepted the material opulence in the service of the Lord, not for the personal sense gratification. Of course, possessing material opulence is always fearful because under the influence of material opulence, one may be misdirected from devotional service. Nonetheless, a pure devotee, anyabhilashita sunyam, is never misdirected by material opulence. On the contrary, whatever he possesses, he engages 100% in the service of the Lord. When one is allured by material possessions, they are considered to be given by Maya. But when one uses material possessions fully for service, they are considered God's gifts or facilities offered by Krishna for enhancing one's devotional service. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? Yeah. That if one is allured by material possessions, so one wants those things, attracted to them, and may be inclined to use them for sense gratification, they're considered given by Maya. So, Prabhupada makes a very clear distinction there. Because, we're all devotees, and sometimes the material facility comes, or quite often, especially in a big movement like ISKCON, lots of money, lots of power, lots of position, status, adoration, and if one is allured by those things, Prabhupada's saying they're a gift of Maya. Because Krishna doesn't like to award material allurements to devotees who may be bewildered by them. He'd prefer that they're kept safe from such things. So Krishna will, just like we see, Lord Brahma is saying, don't give demons like Hiranyakasipu material benedictions. It's not good for anyone. Don't give benedictions that are not good for someone. Whether you're giving them to devotees or to demons, don't award something that's actually for someone's harm. And of course, this is also discussed in the 10th canto that Yudhisthira Maharaj asks, how is it that sometimes the devotees of Lord Shiva seem very opulent, they're very materialistic, sometimes even sinful, and the devotees of Krishna, very pure-hearted, are more often not very well off. And it's explained because Krishna won't give a benediction to his devotees if he thinks it's for their harm. And if Krishna's not going to give a benediction because he thinks it's, some material facility, position, prestige, what have you, then who is giving it? if the devotee's likely to be bewildered by it, then that just leaves Maya. So she's giving. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, isn't it? But one may think, I'm doing so much devotional service, who's giving? Must be Krishna. I'm serving Krishna, must be him. But not necessarily. But again, it's interesting for us, but you know, there's another phenomena we see in spiritual societies, not just ISKCON, but any spiritual society, whether Christianity, Muslim society, or, that we do see, for instance, you know, someone said, asked me yesterday, they said that, you know, we generally see that, you know, amongst the Hindu community, they don't have, you know, we're saying that they are not taking to the spiritual part of the Vedas, taking to Bhakti Yoga, as Krishna mentioned, they're doing all sorts of worship, and yet they seem to be very well off, so something seems to be working for them. But the answer to that is here, that, you know, yes, they're achieving benedictions from Maya, which basically keeps them in a grip, you know, under the spell of Maya. It keeps them under that spell of Maya. But Krishna won't, he doesn't want his devotees to be kept under the spell of Maya, so... I mean, I notice that. I go to a lot of the homes of the you know, from the Hindu community, and you know, they are really doing well. You know, they do very well. Because the families, you know, they're somewhat pious to some degree. But, you know, they have big houses and, you know, nice cars and lots of money and nice clothes and plenty to spend. But their spiritual consciousness is... quite often zero, that I've also noticed. So, and, you know, there's a phenomenon in ISKCON that if someone has big position in ISKCON and big facility, that this is proof that they're a good devotee. Isn't it? So we might have to, you know, reevaluate that. That, you know, is everyone with big position and big facility in ISKCON, is that proof that they're a big devotee? Or is that, you know, is there a possibility they could be being awarded benedictions by Maya? You know, Lord Nityananda used to do one thing that when Lord Nityananda... many people come to associate with devotees and to worship the Lord. If Lord Nityananda considered that a person was materially motivated in the way that they're performing the devotional service, as to why they, you know, they're performing devotional service and basically they wanted to become a big devotee with, you know, big reputation and gradually get a big temple and, you know, lots of facility coming in. So what he would do to make them go away, he would award them all sorts of material benedictions to drive them away so that the devotees wouldn't have to deal with such, you know, insincere person. They wouldn't have to associate with such persons. You know, they wouldn't have to put up with them. They wouldn't have to be bothered by them. While they're actually trying to do some nice service, they have to deal with... persons who are, you know, somewhat imposters, despite the fact that they're chanting and praying and reading the scriptures exactly the same as other devotees. They're doing everything exactly the same, except it's detected that actually the material motivations are really the significant drive of why they're doing those things. You know, there's some devotional, you know, inspiration, no doubt, but predominantly... If Lord Nityananda would consider that, you know, there was a significant insincerity there, then he would award them material benedictions. So in their minds, they've achieved this, I must be really getting the blessings of the Lord, I've been chanting, and I'm getting so many material benedictions and they're not. But he would do that to keep them, you know, from that inner sanctum of devotees and devotional service. And of course Maya acts under his bidding as well, so they get the blessings of Maya by the sanction of Lord Nityananda. actually get the blessings of Maya by the sanctions of Lord Nityananda. Yeah, that's right. But when one uses material possessions fully for service, they are considered God's gifts or facilities offered by Krishna for enhancing one's devotional service. Now, using facility in the service of Krishna, indicates that one is looking after the making facility for using whatever the wealth comes, not just for preaching to new devotees, but also for serving the current devotees. You see that, such persons as, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Shyamananda, when they celebrated the first Gaur Purnim and the Gaur Purnims, annually after that, they invited the devotees, the Vaishnavas from all over India, and they offered each one as they came, they personally went out to greet each Vaishnava, each one. And they offered them garlands, bedding, when they went somewhere to sleep, made sure they had proper bedding so that they were warm, not just, a thin sheet where you're not warm. I heard some complaints the other day, some people went to our guest house up in Bambra, and they were freezing. They had to get some of their own clothing and just try and rug up because there was no adequate blanket, there was no pillow. They invited Vaishnavas from all over India, thousands of them, and made sure each one had blankets, sheets, pillows, bedding, garlands, chandan, clothing. They offered them a full set of clothing because they travel. Sometimes if you travel, then you may only bring so much. So whatever they haven't got, then they made sure for that festival, which went for so many days, everyone had a full set of clothing. Everything. So, prasadam at their own expense. They didn't have to come and pay a fee or, we come to your festival. Oh, yeah, that'll cost you so much. See? So, that's a good standard. That's a nice standard to look at. This is, when they had the first Gaur Purnim festival, Shyamananda, Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur. If you read the description, how they treated the devotees, they spent lavishly on every devotee. It didn't matter if they were big devotee, small devotee, unknown devotee, every devotee got, they were treated like kings, queens.
Where is it described?
In the biographies of Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya. Very nice. Yeah. So that's a good standard. Anything less than that, admire.
In our TOVP collection drive, they give chadar to everybody.
Yeah, well, they're sort of giving a chadar and, they take $1,000 and give you, a 20 rupee chadar or something. So that's different. But, they weren't asking them for money. They're just... you know, at their own expense, they, you know, they were giving. I know even here in this temple, sometimes, you know, I go up to get some bouchard, but I miss breakfast, you know, and I say, I don't eat rice, can I have an extra scoop of sabji? No. They'll argue with me. I'm thinking, I can't even work. I'm, you know, I have health problems. I'm 60 years old. You know, I paid for prasadam for today. You know, can I have an extra scoop? No.
on this note, even upstairs Rupa Prabhu, some of the Guru Maharaj who have got disciples, right, they stay in their house because of lack of proper comforts and all that.
Yeah, some just don't
they
come.
They don't want to name them. Some just, that. Yeah, yeah. Most of them, few of them, only like, you know, gurus or even sannyasis who don't have disciples, then they stay here.
That's right.
In other ways, you know, they
get proper standard. Yeah, that's right. So, you know, it's it's good to read the standards of, you know, what is, you know, fully Krishna conscious. You know, there was a festival, there was a program Srila Prabhupada did, I think it was in India somewhere, and, the devotees cooked prasadam, and one particular devotee was in charge of prasadam. And Srila Prabhupada, there's a conversation you can hear, and Srila Prabhupada, very angry, you know, and... for a considerable time, he spoke, you know, that he was saying, you know, that, you know, this prasadam is such poor quality. You know, we invite guests to the temple. It makes Prabhupada look bad, it makes ISKCON look bad. And he said, the standard prasadam, you'd question whether you're even going to feed that to a dog. Such strong, you know, statements. He said, if you want money, you can ask me personally and I will give you the money personally. If somehow the local people are not giving, you ask me personally, I will give you personally and make sure that the standard prasad, that if guests come, that we give them nice standard prasad like that. So, you know, not that we penny pinch. You know, especially if there's opulence there, that can be utilized in the service of the Vaishnava community, and it's not, which is made even worse if that opulence is used for the purposes of, you know, it all gets soaked up into the, you know, like a lot of charities where the administrators seem to enjoy 70% of what is given and the charity gets about 30%, you know. So, you know, so it's quite, you know, a very strong statement here, but of course, these, you know, it's these purports which are supposed to be discussed in the management meetings. not just what I've noticed over many years, I've very rarely seen, in fact, if you actually pull out in the meetings I've been to, if you pull out one of Prabhupada's books, it's almost like you're not wanted. It's like you pull out and they know you're going to give a quote and they know, oh, this is going to hurt, you know, and they just don't want to hear it. They won't let you speak, you know. So you imagine, you know, purport, yeah, let Prabhu, we're having a, you know, financial discussion. Can we discuss this one here? No. But actually, you know, our finances are based upon, you know, the finances of the Bhagavatam, you know, upon Vaishnava etiquette and upon, You know, we don't want our finances, you know, in any temple in ISKCON, whether it be India, America, locally, we don't want them to be you know, money being misused, siphoned out through maya. You know, wealth, which could be used in the service of the Vaishnavas who are preaching, we don't want maya to be undermining that process. How do we know? Prabhupada gives these clues, because it's very hard to distinguish between, you know, what is Krishna's service, what is maya service, you know, but the Prabhupada is so, you know, that's why these purports are so wonderful, because they just give you the, you know, you see things very clearly, because Prabhupada sees things very clearly, because Prahlad Maharaj sees things very clearly. So, yeah. You know, so that's you know, though, in every temple in ISKCON, these things should be monitored. You know, not by the people who are spending the money. you know, these things shouldn't be monitored by the people who are spending the money. They should be monitored before someone spends the money, isn't it? That's a huge lot. So before you spend, is this for Krishna, is this for Maya? Not, you know, the person who's spending say, yeah, it's all for Krishna, don't worry about it. Forget about it, it's done.
Just where in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a section where it says, Mahaprabhu says that by watering Shravanam Kirtanam, you can also water the weeds.
That's right.
So
yeah,
we have to be careful in distinguishing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah. The weeds, that's right. And those weeds, there's quite a list of, you know, the types of weeds.
Yeah,
big purple.
Same variety as this, so it's hard to distinguish.
Yeah, that's right. It's very hard to distinguish. And and that's why you know, but we make the distinctions through understanding the guidance that we're getting through Srila Prabhupada's books. That helps us to make the distinctions. And and those things are monitored by, you know, everyone has senior devotees who properly monitor things. Srila Prabhupada also implemented Ishtagosi. Ishtagosi means that, you know, the community as a whole can come together and just have an open discussion. And, you know, they can ask questions. You know, if the community has some doubts, then they can question and try and get, you know, some satisfactory answers. So, that, you know, the community, the Ishtagosi, means that the Vaishnava community has an input. It's Ishtagosi. Not that they have no input. Now, we used to have Ishtagosi all the time. We don't have them anymore, really.
We had probably a few for the temple,
no,
kitchen.
No. That's not Ishtagosi.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking about the dinner, Prabhu. We had.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. That's not Ishtagosi. Ishtagosi is an open forum where people feel free to ask questions, and answers are, you know, properly given. It's a very loving environment. You know, just like children talking to their parents, you know, they feel very comfortable to ask questions. is to go see, if you're not comfortable to ask a question or maybe singled out as a troublemaker for asking a question, that's not Ishtagosi. That's something else. If you, you know, Ishtagoshi, you know, is a very open, friendly, loving environment, and the discussion is very open, and the questions can be just asked freely, and you know, there's no being ostracized, being labeled, criticized, you know, singled out, you know, like that. You can actually just ask it a normal question, you know, how's the money being spent? You know, for the, you know, is this, it would seem that this is more on the side of Maya than the side of Krishna. Seems that, you know, money's being spent more here. What about, you know, kids' education? What about security? What about, you know, this and that? You know, and those questions can be discussed, you know, at length and, you know, without fear of retribution. As soon as there's some sort of, you know, oppressive mood from the, disagreement to discuss those things and what have you, it's not really free. You know, if a discussion is sort of contrived and Ishtagoshi is more an open discussion where the questions that the community want to answer, ask, can ask. Not Ishtagoshi, we're going to set this topic and you cannot ask any other question. Ishtagoshi is a little bit more open. You know. But, if there are concerns in the Vaishnava community, then you know, Ishtagoshi means that they can express them. Otherwise, you know, it's a forum where basically, in a close community, you expect that on a regular basis, you know, if there are concerns that circulate through the community, they're regularly heard, regularly, in an open way. Not that, okay, we'll only discuss this, and that's not on the table for discussing, or what have you. I haven't really seen Ishtagoshi here. I've seen Ishtagoshi previously, but not here.
Yeah, they don't have it anywhere in ISKCON world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it anywhere.
Yeah, it really makes a community very trusting, you know, because, you know, when the community knows, I can, in a you know, forum of the community and the leaders, I can ask them any question, and they're such nice leaders, they'll let me ask that question, and they'll not feel bad against me, you know, they'll just answer it nicely, and so I trust them. You know, it actually creates a very close relationship in the community, like that. So we used to be able to have those because of the trust in the community.
When was that? 30 years ago?
Yeah, you know, in you know, like 70s, 80s.
Yeah, 30, 40 years.
It gradually disappeared. As the trust, you know, there was a time in ISKCON where the trust, you know, broke down because some of the leaders, you know, GBCs, gurus, you know, so there was a trust issue. And, you know, the trust, as the trust between the community and the leaders eroded gradually, the Ishtagoshi has faded out, you know. Ishtagoshi really is based upon it, just a nice, trustful relationship, you know. So, you know, if they're not held, you know, if the temples around the world are not really having them, then, you know, they can be had, you know, in, you know, perhaps the restaurants, you know, or, you know, they have a community, you know, we used to have them, like I used to manage Gopal's restaurant, so we'd have an Ishtagoshi, you know. That was in Auckland, that would have been somewhere in the mid-80s, you know, Gopal's for a couple of years. I was their head cook as well. I try not to tell too many people I cook. And damn it, you know, Crossways, I run Crossways in Adelaide for a couple of years. All those things. So, verse number two. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I am naturally attached to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I am very much afraid of material conditions and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason that I have taken shelter of your lotus feet." So, materialistic life means attachment to the body and everything in relationship to the body. This attachment is based on lusty desires for sense gratification, especially, specifically sexual enjoyment. And as described by Krishna, kamaste hritigana, when one is too attached to material enjoyment, he is bereft of all knowledge. And such persons are especially attached to worship of the goddess Durga and Lord Shiva because this transcendental couple can offer their devotees all material opulence. Prahlad Maharaj, however, was detached from all material enjoyment. He therefore took shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nrisingadeva and not the feet of any demigod. For without the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot get released from materialistic life. Although born of a materialistic father, because he was a devotee, he had no material desires. Anyavalasita sunya. Text 3. I am my worshipful Lord because the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart. You have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee. So here, Bhaktivinoda Sindhu has given considerable discussion about Nityasiddha and Sadhana-siddha devotees. Nityasiddha devotees come from Vaikuntha to this material world to teach by their personal example how to become a devotee. So that's interesting. The Nityasiddha, but they still teach how to become a devotee by, and they even go through that process of becoming a devotee, you know, sometimes. The living entities in this material world take lessons from such Nityasiddha devotees and thus become inclined to return home back to Godhead. Just like back to Vinodha Kaur, you know, in his previous life he was considered to take to the impersonal. You know, he was more inclined to the impersonal, you know, philosophy. A Nityasiddha devotee comes from Vaikuntha upon the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and shows by his example how to become a pure devotee, Anyabhilasita Sunya. See, by his example, not just his teaching. Acharya means, Srila Prabhupada says, Acharya means one who teaches by their behaviour. So that, you know, they perfectly understand the scriptures, but you get a sense of the scriptural understanding through their behaviour especially, you know, that they practice. In spite of coming to this material world, the Nityasiddha devotee is never attracted to by the allurements of material enjoyment. A perfect example is Prahlad Maharaj, who was a Nityasiddha, a Mahabhagavat devotee. Although Prahlad was born in the family of Hiranyakasipu, an atheist, he was never attached to any kind of materialistic enjoyment. Desiring to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee, the Lord tried to induce Prahlad Maharaj to take material benedictions, but Prahlad Maharaj did not accept them. On the contrary, by his personal example, he showed the symptoms of a pure devotee. In other words, the Lord himself has no desire to send his pure devotee to this material world, nor does the devotee have any material purpose in coming. When the Lord himself appears as an incarnation within this world, He is not allured by the material atmosphere, and he has nothing to do with material activity, yet by his example, he teaches the common man how to become a devotee. Similarly, a devotee who comes here, in accordance with the order of the Supreme Lord, shows by his personal behaviour how to become a pure devotee. A pure devotee, therefore, is a practical example for all living entities, including Lord Brahma. So, therefore, as we see, it can be difficult sometimes in the beginning to estimate, you know, who is a Nitya Siddha devotee, because, you know, they appear to be going through the process of becoming a devotee. So that's so in the beginning, you know, their Nitya Siddha status may not be apparent. So that verse 3, so here Prahlad saying, because the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart, you have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of pure devotee. Otherwise, my Lord, O Supreme Instructor of the entire world, you are so kind to your devotee that you could not induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Srila Prabhupada says that it is sometimes found that one comes to a devotee or a temple of the Lord just to get some material benefit. Such a person is described here as a mercantile man. Bhagavad Gita speaks of ato jigashu atati. Ato refers to one who is physically distressed, atati, one in need of money. Such persons are forced to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead for mitigation of their distress or to get some money by the benediction of the Lord. They have been described as Sukriti pious because in their distress or need for money they have approached the Supreme Lord. Unless one is pious, one cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're not going out to steal and, you know, do so many things or commit sinful activities. So there's piety there. So many of the Hindus, you know, and you know, Christians, Muslims, they're in that, you know, category. Although a pious man may receive some material benefit, one who is concerned with material benefits cannot be a pure devotee. When a pure devotee receives material opulences, this is not because of his pious activities, but for the service of the Lord. So we've discussed in the second verse that this quote, we had a lengthy discussion in the purport of verse 1, that when one is allured by material possessions, they are considered to be given by Maya. So we're talking about devotees. But when one uses material possessions fully for service, they are considered God's gifts, or facilities offered for Krishna for enhancing one's devotional service. So we discussed that. So here again, same point, when a pure devotee receives material opulences, this is not because of his pious activities, but for the service of the Lord. When one engages in devotional service, one is automatically pious. Therefore, a pure devotee is anyabilasita sunyam. He has no desire for material profit, nor does the Lord induce him to try to profit materially. When a devotee needs something, the Supreme Personality of Godhead supplies it. Yogakshimam yaham yaham. Sometimes materialists go to a temple to offer flowers and fruit to the Lord because they have learned from Bhagavad Gita that if a devotee offers some fruits and flowers, the Lord accepts them. Thus, a man with a mercantile mentality thinks if he can get some material benefit, like a large amount of money, simply by offering a little fruit and flower, this is good business. Such persons are not accepted as pure devotees. Because their desires are not purified, they are still mercantile men, even though they go to temples to make a show of being devoted. Yeah, to make a show of being devoted. Sarvapati vinirmukta tatparadvena niyamanam. When one is fully free from material desires, one can become purified, and only in that purified state can one serve the Lord. This is pure devotional platform. So, so we discussed the point that there are, you know, there is a misunderstanding in spiritual circles, spiritual movements, including ours, especially opulent, where there's a lot of opulence in that spiritual movement, that if someone is awarded a position of status, prestige and facility, it is an indication that that person is a pure devotee and Krishna therefore is giving that person so much facility. But according to this, it may be, or it may be the opposite. It may be that, yes, because they have just the desire to... And what is the criteria to tell? If they use all that position of influence and power and that facility only for the purpose of pure devotional service, spreading Krishna consciousness, without any desire to utilize it for their own benefit in any way, then yes, it is an indication that they're a very advanced devotee. But if, you know, it being channeled significantly, you know, for a good life at the expense of, you know, Srila Prabhupada's movement, then it is a symptom that these things are awarded by Maya and that person is, you know, not a pure devotee of the Lord.
So generally we see that it's mentioned that for a devotee doing devotion service is a piety, so one may get material benedictions because of that piety. Now, when it, most of the time when we see devotees, those who have good karma, primarily indicated by the astrology. So we can see that the karma is working, they are getting a lot of money. Actually the money is coming through.
Yeah.
And those who are meant to be poor according to karma, they are remaining poor. So where is
Krishna? Well, sometimes astrologically a person is getting more wealth than what shows up in their chart. And sometimes persons who actually should be better off are actually, you know, possibly suffering the reactions of, you know, apparatus. So, but as a general rule, yes, that's right. You know, that what you're saying is correct, that from what I see, usually people who, you know, have a good astrological charts for wealth, if they're doing devotional service, wealth is also coming in.
Yeah.
And, you know, the converse is true as well. So, you know, there is a, you know, you know, the results of their piety is just coming in, or the lack of the piety. So that is there. But when what we see in the chart is overridden in a different way, then that's, you know, an indication of you know, the transcendental results overriding the material results to some degree. You know, if it's just far greater, you know, wealth, or far less, you know, as a result of some suffering condition, then it can be how one is executing devotional service. So, I mean, we know that, you know, Srila Prabhupada himself said that, you know, that astrologically, you know, he was meant to be quite wealthy. Still, when he was expecting that wealth to come in, Krishna kept frustrating him. And, you know, and he was sort of, in one sense, a bit surprised by it, because, you know, he should have been having more wealth at that time and he was getting far less than what he expected. You know, he was almost rock bottom. You know, for some, so he felt that that was directly Krishna overriding, you know, the wealth that perhaps should have been there to live. You know. And then, you know, one time, Prabhupada, he said that he explained that. He quoted this verse. This one, Yogi Shimam Yaham Yaham. Is that 9:22?
26.
Yeah, Yogi Shimam Yaham Yaham. 9:22. Yeah. So he quoted that one. That Krishna maintains his devotees. So he was then he was explaining that again how the wealth was directly coming from Krishna directly. And he was saying that, you know, he came to America with 40 rupees and he turned that 40 rupees into 40 crores of rupees.
Mm.
So what is a crore? That's like a...
40 million.
Yeah, but 40 million, that's what I thought, yeah. So 40 million. He said, you know, where... You find any businessman in this world that has ever done. No one has ever done that, you know. So, but he attributed that to the fact that because he wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, that he was saying that Krishna will give you unlimited, you know, he can supply unlimited facility to his devotee who wants to spread Krishna consciousness like that. And then he gave another example. He said, that when he purchased the land in Bombay, I think it was Bombay, he said actually he had enough to put on a small deposit, which wasn't quite enough, and he didn't have the rest that he needed to put on it, nor the rest to put to purchase the property.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he had no idea. There was, you know, so it wasn't as if that was guaranteed or that money was going to come in. It was just he and he said... how did he put in his words? That he expected that Krishna would pay for it. That's what he said. You know, he understood that Krishna will pay for it. You know, so he's I don't have the money, so who's going to pay? And he thought Krishna will pay for it. Like that. So in that case, he's directly indicating that Krishna... You know, there's not his karma, not his destiny, that Krishna is directly going to give Prabhupada the money, you know, to actually purchase that, you know, Bombay, like that. Yeah. Literally, you know, he's saying, well, Krishna will pay for it. That's the words he used. He will pay for it. You know? I don't have the money, but I want that temple for Krishna, for his glorification. See? For the purpose of glorifying Krishna. And he understood that, you know, if one is engaged in Krishna's service and is not using the money for oneself, but for Krishna's happiness, is for his happiness, then Krishna will award that to his devotees who have that pure mentality. Like that. And then he said, you know, in the same lecture, he said that, you know, we have 10,000 men. And he said, daily we are feeding 10,000 men. We do not know, you know, we do not have the money, but somehow Krishna is sending to feed 10,000 men daily. So you imagine, you know, we try to feed, you know, some people, 10,000 men every day. That's what, you know, Prabhupada's, that was his food bill. And that... That does, you know, that doesn't include necessarily. That's just the people, you know, in the movement. In one sense, then there's, you know, other programs that where people come. So, you know, in that case, Prabhupada was, you know, referring to how Krishna either directly, you know, held back money to, you know, for his benefit to force him into not depending on anything else or anyone else except Krishna, which he did. And that when he was in that mood, that he understood that then Krishna was just giving him, you know, as he required facility for devotional service, that Krishna was directly giving that, like that. Far exceeding even, you know, what he expected, you know, like according to his, you know, wealth and what have you. So, like with the example of Bombay, it's not as if, oh, in my chart, you know, in another 6 months or a year's time, or 5 years' time, more wealth would be coming in. Mm-hmm. No, I need the money now. Krishna will send now. Krishna will pay me, like that. So, like that. So, but you see how here, you know, that a pure devotee, he has no desire for material profit, nor does the Lord induce him to try to profit materially. When a devotee needs something, the Supreme Personality of Godhead supplies it. So, you know, that is within the realms of pure devotional service, like the example of Bombay. Prabhupada needed that money, and he needed it, you know, there's a time limit. And his understanding is, that's the way Krishna works. When you have that just pure desire to serve Krishna, Krishna will supply it. And therefore, yes, I'll sign that contract and I'll put a deposit on. I can, you know, I can guarantee, Krishna has said it in the Gita, he will supply it, he'll pay for this temple, like that. So he really put this philosophy, you know, into action. So he was very confident. But that, you know, then asking for Krishna for big amounts of money, you know, he still remains in the jurisdiction of a pure devotee. That's, and yet someone else, as soon as, you know, we're somehow deriving some, personal, gross or subtle benefit from it, for the satisfaction of our material senses, for our own, you know, what have you, then, that takes us out of the... Then you're asking Krishna for the same money, or even you're even asking him for less. then you know, you're out of the realms of pure devotional service. That's interesting. Isn't it? So it's hard to judge by the actions, unless you can only judge by the motivation. But you know, you can understand a person's motivation, you know, by how they utilize the facility that's available to them, you know, by the grace of Krishna. You know, Krishna's providing ISKCON with facility, and so, you know, you see in the Gaudiya Math, of course, that one of the leading devotees went to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said that, you know, your head man, I forget what his name, is that Radha Vallabha or something, the head man of the Radha Vallabha or something, the head man running practically the whole Gaudiya Math on behalf of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he said, he is siphoning off, you know, so much. You know, Prabhupada said, you know, that yes, this is a fact. My Guru Maharaj knew this, and he was paying for all his children to go through law school and so many different things. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, you know, said, yes, I understand. So, you know, that was for his own, just, you know, family, you know, sort of circumstances, which he later used those grown-up children, their legal skills in the court battles to attain, you know, proprietorship of the temples and guruship of the movement. You know, that's what he wanted. So, you know, therefore to satisfy his personal ambitions, which was against, you know, the desires of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He didn't want that. So, so obviously, you know, there was, you know, wealth coming to the Gaudiya Math. And you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, understood that, you know, there are very senior leading devotees who are using it for their own purposes. Not you know, it's but he considered, well, that's, you know, in one sense, it's very difficult. You know, his position was, you know, sometimes you just can't get rid of a manager because he was saying that, you know, who would do his job? You know. So, and, you know, to pay someone, you may end up, you know, if you just pay a professional person, you may pay him more than what he's, you know, taking. And so many considerations. So he understood it was happening, but in the long run, it was not good. But you know, sort of cut your losses, and you know, if he removed him, it'd be worse. That was his, you know, that was the conclusion. If you removed him, it'd be more problem for Krishna. So it's a problem. It'd be more problem if I remove him like that. So I just let it as it is. So and you know, these are, you know, very I would say senior, the most senior persons, almost the right hand of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, who's a Nitya Siddha himself. And according to the definitions here, they're not, you know, up to the standard of pure devotee, you know. Or they may have been, but they've somehow fallen from it. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised in ISKCON, you know, some of the right-hand person, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. Oh, God forbid we have, some, you know, one or two people in ISKCON, you know, do that sort of thing. But then, you know, the question is, you know, what is the best outcome for ISKCON as to how to deal with that? You know, you never want to do anything which in the long run is worse for ISKCON. Yeah. A servant who desires material profits for his master is certainly not a qualified servant or pure devotee. Similarly, a master who bestows benedictions upon his servant because of a desire to maintain a prestigious position as master is also not a pure master. So again, Prabhupada quoting Tomas Tastaya, Hudigana. A demigod cannot become a master, for the real master is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demigods, to keep their prestigious positions, bestow upon their worshippers whatever benedictions the worshippers want. For example, once it was found that an Asura took a benediction from Lord Shiva, by which the Asura would be able to kill someone simply by placing his hands on that person's head. Such benedictions are possible to receive from the demigods. If one wants to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, the Lord will never offer him such a condemned benedictions. And this is a verse quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.88.8, which Prabhupada quoted in his own situation, where Krishna would not allow him to become opulent initially, so that he would just depend upon Krishna and Krishna's process in the way to spread Krishna consciousness. If one is too materialistic but at the same time wants to be a servant of the Supreme Lord, the Lord, because of his supreme compassion for the devotee, takes away all his material opulences and obliges him to be a pure devotee of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj distinguishes between the pure devotee and the pure master. The Lord is the pure master, the supreme master, whereas an unalloyed devotee with no material motives is a pure servant. One who has materialistic motivations cannot become a servant, and one who unnecessarily bestows benedictions upon his servant to keep his own prestigious position is not a real master. So... So So we say that, we're talking, how this would apply to us as devotees, that, we've discussed that the opulence that comes through ISKCON, which Krishna is providing to maintain and spread Krishna consciousness, to be utilized under the guidance of the pure devotees, may sometimes be desired and acquired by those who are not pure devotees and used according to their allurements of Maya. And that means such persons can gain, positions of, control of the financial facility and other facilities, usually by finding different positions of power and authority in ISKCON. So, in order to maintain that prestigious position, they may, spread some of that facility to persons who help to maintain their position and facility. This example given by Lord Shiva, it's an interesting example, because we know Lord Shiva to be a pure devotee of the Lord. But he's given a benediction to an asura, a demon, that anyone he places his hands on that person's head, he'll kill him. So obviously a discrepancy, on the part of Lord Shiva, to facilitate our understanding of just these points. Sometimes personalities like Lord Shiva or even Arjuna become, somewhat a little bewildered by the arrangement of the Lord to demonstrate this. So in this case, he's representing, how powerful demigods can to show their power. Yes, I can give you such a benediction. Anyone's head you touch will be destroyed. Mm. Very powerful benediction. That's a really powerful benediction. So see my power. In this case, he's not representing the Vaishnava community, but the demigod community, by the arrangement of Krishna. In the same way that Arjuna, on the Battle of Kurukshetra, by saying no to Krishna, I shall not fight, he was representing the conditioned souls at that stage, by Krishna's arrangement, he's representing us. So, it's an ostentatious display of wealth. We see in the verses of the 16th chapter, how demons work. Yes, giving charity, I give charity this one. They're all coming to me begging. It's a display of the ostentatious display of wealth. Yes, you come to me begging, anyone wants. I am the master like that. You're all subordinate. You're dependent upon me. Actually, Krishna is that position, but they're taking that position. It can happen to a devotee as well. These things, it can happen to devotees. The materialistic propensity is the same. Whether it happens to a devotee, whether it happens to a demon, or whether it happens to a demigod, the materialistic propensity just plays out in the same way. Materialistic propensity means one becomes attracted to enjoy, material facility for sense gratification, sudden growth. Whether you're a demon, a devotee, or a demigod, it plays out the same way. And in this case also, such persons who have that allurement then in that position as the master of so much power and position and facility, then they can utilize that, giving benedictions, awarding position. You rise up to the elevated position, you rise up. You have this facility, you have this facility, like that. In a temple, of course, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the core, noticed that, what was happening in the Calcutta temple, which was a very opulent temple, that they were beginning to fight, even in his presence, over who would get such a room and, this. And, of course, so you'd imagine that those, as we've said, there were some at the top who, a little allured by Maya, and they'd be in the position, oh, you get this room. Oh, you get the room. And someone said, no, but that room should be used for such and such a purpose of spreading Krishna consciousness. No, this person should have this. And, so, you would get this. So, these benedictions. And of course, as this temple expands in its opulence, and don't be surprised that people, devotees, will also be, in competition, for offices and rooms and, this, that, and the other. Starts off with a little locker and then, builds up. And, so I remember, as young devotees, thank God, that sort of mentality was, knocked out of our crazy heads pretty quick, smart. We just, slept on the floor up there in the Prasadam Hall. That Prasadam Hall up there, so along the back wall, we had a row of lockers, so a single locker, not a double. And, you could keep, as brahmacharis, you could keep whatever possessions you had. In those days, it didn't matter whether you're a brahmachari or grihasa, you still, got married, but, they're not going to get the facility to have a home. You just, stay there with the brahmacharis. And whatever facility you had, you just put in that locker. You couldn't, you're not supposed to have stuff on top, just, so you had two sets of clothes and, a bag of a gita, your chanting beads, and, perhaps a roll-out mattress, sleeping bag, and not much else, and a set of clothes, one set of clothes for, when you dress up in the Western clothes for going out and collecting Lakshmi. I remember one time, one of the devotees, he wanted a second pair of pants. And the pair of pants that he had, you actually had to dry clean. And we had a whole discussion. And we had a meeting, the Sankirtan meeting, that this is way over the top. But he convinced everyone that I will do better if I look more presentable. So we agreed to it. And then he wanted a second pair of pants. Mm-hmm. Well, if one's in the dry cleaning, I'm going to need a second pair. So we allowed it, like that. But it was a discussion, but so little facility. And in that room, then personalities like Korma and Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada disciple, and they had a cubicle. Generally, they also laid on the floor and what have you. And they're very little facility, but they might have a little table with a desk and a desk lamp or something. So, a little bit more, a little bit of privacy like that. but we were all up there, all of us. And when there's a festival and people come from other temples, and, that balcony where the shop is, that was an open balcony, to devotees that sleep there. Sometimes they sleep in the temple room, sometimes they sleep out in the courtyard, wherever, as long as they're up before Mangalarti, so people didn't have to see these devotees sleeping in the temple room. It was okay. So it's good, you know, knock that facility. You just didn't expect to have anything, you know. And you got used to, you know, you could actually go for years and years and years without having anything, and you learn how to do that in this world. I still, you know, to this day, sort of, you know, it's, you know, talking to prisoners. Because I got given a phone by temple management. It's sort of broken. It's got a broken screen. It was someone's brother. And sometimes people call me, and because it's broken, when I touch it, it doesn't answer. It's really frustrating. I miss a call. And it's a really, and you know, my fingers sometimes, because if I got key or anything, it's very sensitive. So I'm like this, you know, there's just nothing happening. And it's an old window sort of thing. But anyway, I was talking to Christian, and she said, oh, you know, oh, we should replace that. And I said, yes, they had a meeting. They said they would replace it. And I said, but then they said, no, just keep that one. We're not going to replace it. And she said, no, I have to, you know. And I said, listen, don't have a meeting on my account. I'll just use whatever I'm given. I don't want a meeting. I'll just use it until someone gives me something better like that. So, you know, still to the day, you know, whatever I have, I try and just use that. You know, I never ask for anything. If they offer it, I'll accept it. Otherwise, I just don't ask. But, you know, that was their training. That, but it sort of sticks.
What if some training is there, but, you know, if you're in the ashram, then it's like a restricted, like a forced restriction that you can't have anything. But then when everybody starts working and they can just, they feel like they can do whatever they want, and kind of.
Look, the training one gets in the ashram will stay with one for life, you know, to some degree or another, you know. As we're seeing from this chapter, though, it is possible that when material facility comes, which may not necessarily be crucial to our service, but maybe just more comfort for our, you know, make us a bit too comfortable in material life, we may become allured to it. So, you know, that's possible. And that's what here Pallad is describing. That, you know, these allurements, you know, Krishna tries to avoid giving more than what the devotee knows, because he knows, you know, even good devotees, it will bewilder them. You know, yeah, even good devotees with good training. You know, the material energy, you know, because as Pallad is saying, in the core of our hearts, until we're 100% pure devotees, is this the seed of lusty desires. You know, Prabhupada would say, you know, when he'd see his disciples and their hair started to grow, they weren't regularly shaving up, say every month or something, then he would say, these hippie seeds are growing. These hippie seeds are growing. You know, just the slightest indication, just a little extra hair on the head, Prabhupada, you know, these hippie seeds. Hippie seeds, as we discussed the other week, you know, by and large, you know, the hippies were considered, he considered there were signs of detachment, but sex life, no one's detached from in this world like that. So, you know, that means basically, you know, the sex attraction, you know, is coming. And then, night, you know, little hair, and trying to attract the girls. Yeah. It's more attractive, you know. Usually if you see men and they're looking for a wife, usually they'll grow their hair a little bit. There's two symptoms by which you can tell. The men will grow a little more hair, and the women lose weight. And that's how you can tell they're trying to get, you know, they're looking for a husband. So they don't, you know, you don't have to be an astrologer. Someone comes up to me, yes, I know what you want. So we have to be careful. The seeds are there. And, you know, how many devotees have we lost amongst Prabhupada's disciples? You know, Prabhupada said, you know, he said, you know, he used the word many. and many of my disciples, we're losing them because they fear that I'm depriving them of these basic facilities for, you know, material life, you know, by making them follow the Brahma principles and that. So, you know, he considered that, you know, that is the thing, you know, that's why we, you know, that produces, you know, if we have doubts, then, you know, when we have some material desire, then we'll allow that doubt to take us away. But a person without the material desires, you know, doubt comes and, you know, why not face it? Why not, you know, challenge the doubt, you know, argue with your mind like that. But we give in a lot easier if we have material desires, you know, there's profit in it to lose, to allow that doubt to, someone says, you know, why did you leave Krishna consciousness? Oh, I just had so many doubts, you know. Or if you said to the same person, why did you leave Krishna consciousness? I'm just such a lusty person. it has a different sound, doesn't it? So, yeah.
We have this discontinuity theme, how I came to Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they should start another theme, how I left Krishna consciousness. Why I left Krishna consciousness.
Don't give anyone ideas.
To learn from the other side of the story.
Yeah. But we know why. But, you know, still, that may be there, but, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the cause, taught us that you know, everyone in this world has, you know, material desires, all of us, and you know, most of us as devotees are still struggling, you know, with material desires, and we know that if people leave Krishna consciousness, there's doubts and they overcome them, and, you know, the material desires, you know, have a lot to do with it. But for the principle, maintaining the principle of humility, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta showed us that, you know, we should feel that, you know, this is also a reflection of my ability to preach and to, you know, look after these devotees. You know? So, you know, it's against the principles of humility, despite the fact that, you know, people may have left due to some material desires or some bad things that happened to them in Iskcon, and we just sort of, you know, well, that's, you know, they've gone away, because, you know, for the principle of humility, we should accept responsibility, you know, that, you know, if we could have perhaps been, you know, a little bit more accommodating, a little bit more friendly, you know, try to be, you know, a better quality of devotee that was more attractive to them and stuff like that. So for the principle of humility, we maintain that position. If we leave Krishna consciousness, we should be honest, you know, yes, because I'm, you know, I've got material desires and so, you know, like that. But if someone else leaves, you know, we shouldn't be thinking, you know, they're just, you know, not very good quality devotee, you know, so they left like that. We shouldn't follow that path. That's not good. And it certainly doesn't help them to come back, you know, if they feel that, oh, that's how they think of me, like that, you know. I, my Lord, I am your unmotivated servant, and you are my eternal master. There is no need of our being anything other than master and servant. You are naturally my master, and I am naturally your servant. We have no other relationship. So here's this fixed up in this sambandha, our eternal relationship with Krishna. Jivera Svarupa Hoya, what Chaitanya says. Krishnera Nityadas. Every living entity is eternally a servant of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Krishna says, I am the proprietor of all planets, and I am the supreme enjoyer. This is the natural position of the Lord. And the natural position of the living entity is to surrender unto him. Savadamam parigyagyam mamikam salanam braja. If this relationship continues, then real happiness exists between the master and servant. Unfortunately, when this eternal relationship is disturbed, the living entity wants to become separately happy and thinks that the master is his order supplier. In this way, there cannot be happiness. Nor should the master cater to the desires of the servant. If he does, he is not the real master. The real master commands, you must do this. And the real servant immediately obeys the order. Unless this relationship between the Supreme Lord and the subordinate living entity is established, there can be no real happiness. The living entity is Ashraya, always subordinate, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Vishaya, the supreme objective, the goal of life. Unfortunate persons trapped in this material world do not know this. Illusion by the material energy, everyone in this material world is unaware that the only aim of life is to approach Lord Vishnu. Aradhananam savisham Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tariyanam samachanam. In the Padma Purana, Lord Shiva explains this to his wife, Parvati, the goddess Durga, that the highest goal is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, who can be satisfied only when his servant is satisfied. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore teaches Gopi Bhattur Parakamalayur Dasa Dasana Das. One must become a servant of the servant. So we come back to this point, which has been a significant theme throughout all Prahlad's teachings. That Prahlad Maharaj also prayed to Lord Narasimha that he might be engaged as the servant of the Lord's servant. This is the prescribed method of devotional service. As soon as the devotee wants the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be his order supplier, the Lord immediately refuses to become the master of such a motivated devotee. Bhagavad Gita 4:11. As one surrenders unto me, I reward him accordingly. Materialistic persons are generally inclined to material profits. As long as one continues in such an adulterated position, he does not receive the benefit of returning home back to Godhead. So there's natural positions of the intimate relationship between the superior person and the subordinate person. They're intimate, you know, natural positions. So, for instance, a little child and you know, that relationship has been described by Prahlad Maharaj already, I think in the chapter 6. Let's see, do I have chapter 6, text number 1? I got that there. Text number two. The human form of life affords one a chance to return home back to Godhead. Therefore, every living entity, especially in this human form of life, must engage in devotional service to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This devotional service is natural because Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most beloved, the master of the soul, and the well-wisher of all living beings. So Prahlad Maharaj has established that in chapter 6, verse number 2, and this has been repeated here. And we say that, you know, it's natural to love, it's actually natural to love Lord Vishnu. Prabhupada explains it in this way. Why do we love our body? Because the body is related to the soul. We're, the soul is living in this body, so naturally we have affection for this body. Of course, you know, it's not a stable relationship because the body is a source of so much problem and it's temporary. So, you know, but, you know, so we're, but, you know, anyone who has a home or a place where they, you know, they naturally have affection for that place where they reside, and that's, you know, so the soul residing. So it's natural. And the soul, so, but why do we have attachment for the body is because we're attached to the soul. That's the point. Because we actually, that's the self. You know, I'm not attached, you know, we don't become attached to another body because we're not residing in that body. We're residing in this body. And it's because the soul is here, so I'm actually attached to myself, the soul, you know, naturally. That's natural. We are part and parcel of Vishnu, Krishna. So he is the super self. He is also the self, but the super self, an individual. But there's an intimate relationship between ourself and the higher self of the super self. We're two individuals, but it's an eternal. So that's natural that we have a natural relationship with Vishnu because he is the. We're part and parcel of that self. We're part of that self. It's another aspect of ourself that we have, you know, as an entire different individual identity, but still ourselves are, you know, attached as one in one sense. Like the sun and the sunshine, a little particle of sunshine is, you know, it has a relationship with the sun, although they're two different things. So it's natural for us to actually, and because the super self of Vishnu is, you know, unlimitedly powerful, the controller of all the energies, including the spiritual energy and the marginal energy, and he awards the marginal potency the freedom to choose. So although he's the controller, that either the marginal spirit soul can reside in the material energy or the spiritual energy, so he's controlled, but he also has full independence. But you can choose by your love, your natural love, to serve me. And in the spiritual world, everyone naturally serves the personality of Godhead by their free will. So it's natural, and it's done out of independent free will. There's nothing forced not good. So, just like Prabhupada gives this example also, in his lectures, that the little baby is produced from the mother. And therefore, naturally, the mother has a natural, you know, so it's natural for us to love Vishnu, it's natural for Vishnu to love us as well. So you see with the example of the baby and the mother, that the baby's been produced from the mother. So naturally, she's very, you know, attached to that baby. It's literally come from herself. Is it, you know, and the baby feeds, you know, the baby breastfeeds. And, you know, if the baby is not attached to the mother, you can, you know, becomes disturbed. You can do all sorts of things. You give it to so many different people. But until it's back with the mother, you know, that's where the natural affection is. And then the baby feels satisfied. So the baby, the mother doesn't have to, you know, do business with the baby to get the baby to, you know, breastfeed and have it. It's just natural, and it should be that way. Otherwise, you know, there's a problem in the relationship. it's disturbed relationship, and something has to be corrected. And the baby shouldn't have to be paying the mother, you know, doing something, you know, like that for the mother. It's just natural like that. So Prahlad is pointing out, you know, the natural situation is there between the soul and the Supreme Soul. And if there's business has to be done by the master or the servant, there's something wrong. In which case Krishna, you know, says, okay, that needs to be corrected. And the place to be corrected is to be corrected in the material world. And until you come back to this group, you know, until it's corrected, then that eternal relationship can't be, you know. You can't attain entrance in the spiritual world to serve the master eternally in that natural relationship like that. I might just pause. I'm just going to go to the bathroom for a minute. Can you just pause that for a second? And if you have any questions or comments, I'll take them. Come back. Now, so now Prahlad himself is detecting this, that actually there's a natural, proper position, eternal, you know, loving position of the Supreme Lord as the master and the pure devotee as a servant. As soon as one does acts in a mercantile way, desiring some remuneration, Prahlad is saying, then that relationship is broken. So Prabhupada, you know, he explains that if someone goes to their employer and they work and they get the pay, actually there is no master-servant relationship. Because if they're not going to get paid, then they won't do the service. See? So the relationship is not actually there. And then Srila Prabhupada says, so in actuality, one who is serving their own senses, their own purposes, is not serving anyone, neither as a master, nor as a parent, nor as a friend, nor as a lover. They're only serving themselves. As soon like that. So actually the relationship's not actually established anywhere. Prahlad actually wants the actual relationship to be established, and he doesn't want to be guilty of, you know, a false master-servant relationship, which should be loving and mutual and natural, to actually not be present, because one is literally just serving oneself under the guise of a master, you know, servant relationship like that. Yeah. So he wants the real thing, you know, that loving relationship. And of course, so, you know, Lord Chaitanya, he is giving the essential teachings, summing up all the Vedas, that every living entity is Jivaras Rupaha Krishna and Nichadas, is eternally the servant of the Supreme Lord. So every living entity has to come to that position to accept that they are eternally the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we can serve the Lord in, dasya rasa, asakya rasa, vatsalya rasa, madhurya rasa, like that. So we can actually take up that service in any of those different rasas. But one way or another, we are all eternally the servant, and the Lord is always, you know, the master. We're the servant; He's the master. But you can serve Him, our eternal master, in sakirasa, friendship. He agrees, although He's the eternal master, He will, reciprocate your service in a friendly way. But one way or another, we're eternally His servant. No one can escape that, what they call the Dharma, or, one's constitutional position. So one may say, I'm not serving anyone, but, we're serving our senses, we're serving our mind, we're serving our family. Even if one is the president, one is serving the country, you cannot avoid that, the fact that we're the servant. It's just that it's misguided. It should be, naturally, it should be towards Vishnu, Krishna, because actually we want our desire for lusty desires, which means, we're not after the eternal rasa of service in love, but we're after the material rasa of service for sense gratification. That's called lusty desires. That's what's in the heart. And therefore, we accept. And that means we're actually the servant of our lusty desires. And that means, factually, it's a false service to others like that. So the only real service position then is service to Krishna. Mm. Otherwise, it's all false. Yeah.
So even great personalities who are seen as leaders of social movements, they are seen as more
masters.
No, less selfish, or they're just like a leader of the civil rights movement.
Yes, yeah.
Or trying to some social cause, free the slaves or something.
Mm.
They seem as very great, servants. But they're actually not servants.
They're in the same position as every other conditioned soul, serving their lusty desires, more or less.
Mm. And although you were saying constitutionally we're servants, but because in this verse Blood Marriage is saying we have no other relationship, is he indicating his relationship of the Dasyas?
No, he's indicating that we're all the servant of Krishna. You can serve Krishna in Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. You can serve Krishna in any of those rasas.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not necessarily stating his rasa. I'm not sure what his rasa is. He may be in Dasya rasa, but this applies to everyone, no matter what your rasa is. They're all serving Krishna. They're all accepting the position of satisfying Krishna's desire. He's the master. We satisfy your desires, Krishna. That's servant. But you can satisfy Krishna's desires in those different rasas. Either way, we're serving Krishna's desires, and that's called out of love. But no desire for remuneration on the material or spiritual platform. And that's even on the spiritual platform, that's what distinguishes the mood of the gopis between the queens of Dwarka and Lakshmi and Kubja. Even on the spiritual platform, there are different degrees of to the degree that Krishna's happiness comes first. Spiritual platform even. Which is, and therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also says, there is no better form of service, to the Supreme Lord than that exemplified by the gopis of Vrindavan. That's that mood of devotional service, and we use the term service. You know, there's no better form of devotional service than that exemplified by the gopis, especially Srimati Radharani. Yeah. So they're all servant. And Srila Prabhupada often quoted, you know, that, you know, when the queens of Dwarka met and they asked each other, how did you marry Krishna, you know, I became the maidservant of Krishna, they all consider themselves servant. They're the queens, they're Krishna's wives. But they're saying, I became Krishna's maidservant in this way. I became Krishna's maid. All in the mood of service. Everyone is servant except for Krishna. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says.
Who is serving his devotees all the time?
Yeah.
Yes, but he still maintains the position of master. his natural position, that's right. Although he does that, but that is his that's his love, it doesn't mean he loses his position to do that. He keeps his eternal position as a master, and yet he engages in, you know, service. That's his love. And therefore we see that on the Battle of Kurukshetra, he drew the chariot of Arjuna. But when Arjuna became bewildered, we see that Krishna was still the master. And therefore he instructed him in the science of Bhagavad Gita. So he never, although he was engaged in service, he never lost his position as the master. Hrishikesh. And therefore Arjuna addressed him, Hrishikesh, you were the master of the senses. So the, you know, these verses that we're reading, they are the essence of Sambandha Gyan. What is our eternal relationship? Unless we establish our relationship on the spiritual platform, we cannot make progress in spiritual life. So this is the essential understanding that one must gain, Sambandha Gyan, in order to have move forward. And then without this, how do we perform activities on the spiritual platform? How do we go to Abhideya activities? Srila Prabhupada mentions, you know, people may fight for their country because they've established a relationship. I'm American, you know, I'm Russian, so I fight for this country, not that. Because this is my relationship. Our activities begin after establishing our relationship. Otherwise, then there's no question of activities on the spiritual platform until this. And this is the establishment of the relationship. Then one can actually engage in devotional service. And this is what Prabhupada mentions. You know, what he's saying here, as long as one, materialistic persons are generally inclined to material profits, as long as one is continues in such an adulterated position, he does not receive the benefit of returning home back to Godhead. Cannot perform any activities at all, cannot even get to the spiritual world. And, text number 7. As you say, the foundational understandings, you know, it's like what Lord Chaitanya is saying here, Jivera Srupa Ahoya Krishnera Nityadas. Lord Chaitanya is just putting in very plain language what Prahlad Maharaj is saying here, you know, philosophically. It's just, it's the same, exact same statement, just made a little bit more, couched for common understanding in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, but the bedrock of, you know, this Sankirtan movement. And therefore, you know, Rupa Goswami says that until you give up all other upadis, you know, designations, sava upadi, we have to give up all the other designations and just see ourselves as the, you know, what is our relationship? It's not with this, it's not with that, it's only with Krishna. Then we can move forward in that purified state in devotional service. In pure devotional service. Otherwise, we're performing, there may be a bit of devotion, but the materialistic, our relationship with this material world overrides our bhakti and becomes a predominant factor. O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your Lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Again, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nadanam Nadanam Nasandrim. O my Lord, I do not want from you any amount of wealth, nor many followers, nor a beautiful wife, for these are the materialistic desires. But if I have to ask for you for any benediction, I pray that in whatever forms of life I may take my birth, under any circumstances, I will not be bereft of your transcendental devotional service. So again, we see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's principal teachings is exactly the same as Prahlad Maharaj's teachings. And Srila Prabhupada points out that devotees are always on the positive platform in contrast to the Mayavadis who want to make everything impersonal or void. One cannot remain void, sunyavadi. Rather, one must possess something. Therefore, the devotee on the positive side wants to possess something, and this possession is very nicely described by Prahlad Maharaj, who says, if I must take some benediction from you, I pray that within the core of my heart there may be no material desires. The desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not at all material. So that's, that benediction, that's his possession, achieving the devotional service of the Lord, that's his only asset. Just like, we have a similar prayer. Chitete Kariya Vakya. We pray to Srila Prabhupada every morning. My only wish, my only desire is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from your lotus mouth. I have no other desire. That my heart be purified from all material desires, that is a result of hearing the words emanating from your lotus mouth, and what is left is a desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is not a material desire, it's completely spiritual. It is on the positive side because one must possess something. So that's the same prayer, within that prayer of Srila Prabhupada, it's exactly the same. Except, as Prahlad Maharaj said back here, that you must go through the devotee. To achieve that platform of devotion, to serve the Lord, we go through, the servant and the servant. So we don't, here Prahlad has offered the same, that let me have that desire and become the servant of your servant. And we say the same thing every morning to Prabhupada. Let me be the servant, servant, servant. My only desire is to have my conscience purified by the words emanating from your lotus mouth. It is that exactly the same as what Prahlad Maharaj is saying here every morning. And Prabhupada would say to his disciples, mentioning that, he'd say, you sing that every morning. So what are you doing? Why are you acting and thinking in other different ways? This is what you're saying, you're asking, that is your only desire. Are you even, you're singing every morning. Have you heard what you're singing? Have you thought about what you're singing? Are you confused at how to make progress in devotional service when you're singing, the same prayer, the Lord Chaitanya, same prayer as Prahlad, we sing that to Prabhupada, and still we don't know how to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, but you're singing every morning. Sometimes they're singing that verse and the devotees are singing that verse, and while they're singing, they're thinking, I've worshipped Prabhupada nicely, you know, we'll get that second mortgage, you know. We'll get, you know, I will get a nice wife, you know. My only, as they're singing, these things are going on in there. I will. So Prabhupada is saying, you're singing it. So what's going on in your head while you're singing that? Nothing? Is there cow dung up there? Oh, my Lord, because of lust and desires from the very beginning of one's birth, the function of one's senses, mind, life, body, religion, patience, intelligence, shyness, opulence, strength, memory and truthfulness are vanquished. Come on, Hridrogam. Materialistic life means that one is afflicted by a formidable disease called lusty desire. Liberation means freedom from lusty desires because it is only due to such desires that one must accept repeated birth and death. As long as one's lusty desires are unfulfilled, one must take birth after birth to fulfill them. Because of material desires, therefore, one performs various types of activities and receives various types of bodies with which to try to fulfill desires that are never satisfied. The only remedy is to take devotional service, which begins when one is free from all material desires. Anyabhilasita-sunyam means material desire, and sunyam means free from. The spirit soul has spiritual activities and spiritual desires, as described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mamma Janari Jamnareshwari Bhavatar Bhakti Hajiki Chwai. Unalloyed devotional service to the Lord, of the Lord is the only spiritual desire. To fulfill this spiritual desire, however, one must be free from all material desires. Desireless means freedom from material desires. Anyabhilasita-sunyam. As soon as one has material desires, one loses his spiritual identity. Then all the paraphernalia of one's life, including one's senses, body, religion, patience and intelligence, are deviated from one's original Krishna consciousness. As soon as one has material desires, one cannot properly use his senses, intelligence, mind and so on for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mayavadi philosophers want to become impersonal, senseless and mindless, but that is not possible. The living entity must be living, always existing with desires, ambitions and so on. These should be purified, however, so that one can desire spiritually and be spiritually ambitious without material contamination. In every living entity, these propensities exist because he is a living entity. When materially contaminated, however, one is put into the hands of material misery. If one wants to stop repeated birth and death, one must take to the devotional service of the Lord. Sarva paribhinir muktam. Tat parat bhena nirmalam harishikena harishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchite. Bhakti, or devotional service, means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of all the senses. When the spirit soul renders service to the Supreme, there are two side effects. One is freed from all material designations and, simply by being employed in the service of the Lord, one's senses are purified. So, although one cannot actually perform devotional service properly if one is not purified, here this nice verse is saying, but still perform devotional service because it will purify you. But understand that the purification is required. The material desires have to go. Just because, don't think because I'm doing devotional service, then I don't need to remove the material desires. Well, I'm doing devotional service.
Mm.
So, you know, why Krishna's allowing me to serve him. So why you know, make such a big thing about the material desires? I can do both. Not a big thing. But this purport is saying that actually, to the degree, you know, the material motivation is there, to that degree, you know, you may be serving Krishna, but he's not satisfied. And sometimes he's not even accepting, you know, but significant. And so, now this is a very significant point, because you may get 10 devotees perform the same service. There's a tendency in a big temple that, you know, okay, if a certain devotee, you know, is performing some particular service, yeah, if that devotee, you know, somehow moves to another temple, or we don't have, so we just get the next person in. Doesn't matter. They just got a cook or, you know, whatever. You know, so, but it's not the same. It's not just because, yes, you still get, everyone's still getting khichdi for breakfast.
Mm.
So what, you know, what's the difference? But according to this, no, things are not going on the same at all. You know, one devotee may be, you know, cooking for Krishna in Krishna consciousness. What is the result? The devotee community, they get a sense of, you know, by eating that prasad, it increases their Krishna consciousness. A very powerful prasad, very purifying. Another devotee cooking the prasad, even Prabhupada himself, he's angry.
Mm.
What is this? Not fit to feed a dog?
Mm.
Even Prabhupada is not happy. You know, so that's the danger in a big temple. Oh, there's so many men. You know, anyone can do it. And of course, big temple means, you know, I'm not talking about this temple, but big temple means big facility. So there's dangers, you know, that people with, you know, material allurements may be attracted to, you know, facility and position. And then to maintain that facility, then you just keep moving people through. Rather than have people become, you know, established as authorities in anything. That's not a good policy. So anyone will do. You know, the other thing is you have to keep people moving through. Anyone would do. It sort of means that, oh, so-and-so has been around for so long, you know, and everyone else seems to be not as qualified as them because they come and go. But, you know, actually here, you know, when Prabhupada, I think he was in Melbourne, I think he was here, and they took up the plate of maha just being cooked. Prabhupada tasted some puri and said, who has cooked this? He is very Krishna conscious. That person is, he said, that person is following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness very nicely. Of Korma has done that. From, you know, little puri Prabhupada. Ah, you know, that's the standard Prabhupada, mate. We may not be able to tell the difference. We can't tell the difference. You know, we should be able to tell the difference, actually. We shouldn't take, you know, we actually shouldn't take advantage of the fact that the Vaishnava community can't tell the difference between good quality service and service which is not on that level. We shouldn't take advantage of them for some benefit. for the sake of preaching and for the sake of the Krishna consciousness, we should actually reciprocate with the bhakti and encourage good quality bhakti. That is actually the proper duty of management of senior devotees, is to be able to recognize all the different degrees of bhakti very clearly. They should be able to see exactly the levels of bhakti that are being executed by each devotee performing a particular service, and they should encourage the bhakti factor. They're not giving benedictions and facility, to consolidate their position as master. They're rewarding bhakti. That's a whole different style of management. That's proper management. And what happens is that, according to this purport, the lesser degree of bhakti, actually the person is unable to do that service. That means that you can guarantee that to the degree the bhakti is reduced, that service will not be done properly. The level of cleanliness, the proper attention to what needs to be done, the proper understanding of how things should be done. None of that will be up to the standard. The higher the degree of bhakti there is, then the proper standard of service will be done to Krishna's satisfaction, and it is not possible to do that service otherwise. Unless one who is not as qualified in bhakti hears from senior devotees who are qualified in bhakti and very happily acts as the servant of the servant of the servant, and then that service will be done. Because actually the senior devotee is doing it, and the younger devotee is like an instrument, and despite the fact that the bhakti may not be there, they're hearing. And this is, we've discussed this hearing process is not just like one of the nine, you can accept, it goes on, up until you get to the spiritual world. Hearing is not like, I did a lot of hearing when I became a new devotee. And, I've moved on to, other things now. I'm almost up to Sakyam, Atmanavedam. If devotees can't hear from senior devotees, as I've said, I noticed this, unfortunately, to a very significant degree, that you just can't instruct anyone anymore, and no one wants to take instruction, because, the material propensity is there. Oh, you want me to mop the floor? Yeah, you don't have to tell me how to mop a floor. Actually, for Krishna, I do have to tell you how to mop the floor. Make some garland? You don't have to tell me how to make garland. You put a garland on a bit of string. Actually, for Krishna, you do have to be told how to make a garland in Krishna consciousness. There's a difference. It will come out differently. But it's very hard. This is the problem with a lot of influx of the corporate influence. The corporate influence, the expertise in the corporate world is replacing the expertise in bhakti, and that's very sad.
How far we have to be mindful about the etiquette while correcting or shouting
What are you saying?
How far do we have to be careful about the etiquette?
When instructing
others? When instructing or correcting?
It has to be done with bhakti. Otherwise you can't instruct. That's what we just said. Instructing is a service. It's part of preaching. But if the bhakti is not there, you can't instruct people properly. I'm not saying you, but that's a service. Any service. Someone places themselves in a position to perform any service, including instructing. In fact, instructing is to place oneself, as Prabhupada says, in a position of a senior advanced devotee is very dangerous. Because if one is instructing, it actually means you have to criticize.
Mm.
And you have to judge. So that's a very dangerous thing to do, especially if someone who thinks they're an advanced devotee is being critical of a senior devotee or judgmental, and they're actually, on top of that, they're wrong. So we have nectar of instruction here, and you know, in the nectar of instruction, Srila Prabhupada says straight out, one should not, one cannot give instruction to, a very advanced devotee. You don't do that. A junior devotee just doesn't do it. Even if, that's for their peers and what have you, they may, question, and ask that, oh, I don't understand, I read this, but you appear to be doing that. An innocent inquiry, but to instruct is dangerous. So, so sometimes if you have persons from a corporate background who take positions of authority because they're a corporate ability, but their bhakti is quite significantly deficient and they're giving instruction and criticism and judgments on senior devotees, it's a very dangerous, foolish position to be in. And it undermines the whole bhakti process in the temple. No, it's not possible for them to, give instruction with proper etiquette. So, the bhakti principle here is being pointed out. Without that, we're not serving Krishna. And even if we want to offer it, he may not accept it, especially if there's aparads involved. Even we're doing that activity. And this is what it means, that, it says that, the functions of the senses, mind, life, body, religion, patience, intelligence, truthfulness, the vanquished. So, the functions means that those things are going on, but the function that should be achieved is not achieved. So one is using one's intelligence and the result is something foolish. Whereas if with bhakti, one uses one's intelligence and something intelligent, gets done. One is being religious and the result is, something which is... one is replacing superior religious principles with inferior ones. At the wrong time and place, and therefore not performing religious principles at all. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, the injunction is to accept Mahaprasadam as immediately as a given. And we also have to fast on a codicil. So, we take that, the superior position, let's put that, we'll accept that prasad, we'll eat the Mahaprasad which has grains in it tomorrow. So but if one doesn't do that, one has done something irreligious in the name of religion. So one's, the religious activities are going on, but the function of doing something religious is not there, and one has actually done something irreligious. So these things are going on, but the function is actually something different. It's lost. One is being shy and humble. And actually, the result is the person is being proud and arrogant and offensive, for those not trained in bhakti, they can't tell the difference, generally in a community, even such as ours, I'd say 90% of the people would not be able to tell the difference. And this is also from practical experience, what to speak of shastri, between when the functions of one's activities are getting the proper result due to bhakti And when, you know, the functions are there, the bhakti is deficient, and therefore, you know, the result is something different, but people cannot see because they just see the same. Oh, the devotee is being humble. And a senior devotee looks like, that devotee's not being humble, they're being arrogant. Really? Looks like he's been humble. No, he's been very arrogant. But 90% of devotees wouldn't be able to see that. Oh, my Lord, when a human being is able to give up all the material desires in his mind, he becomes eligible to possess wealth and opulence like yours. Atheistic men sometimes criticize a devotee by saying, if you do not want to take any benediction from the Lord, and if your servant of the Lord is as opulent as the Lord himself, why do you ask for the benediction of being engaged in, as the Lord's servant? So we have a comment by Sridhar Swami. Bhagavat, becoming as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not mean becoming one with him or equal to him. Although in the spiritual world, the servant is equally as opulent as the master. The servant of the Lord is engaged in the servant, in the service of the Lord as a servant, friend, father, mother, or conjugal lover, all of whom are equally as opulent as the Lord. This is the Chinchabeda-beda tattva. The master and servant are different yet equal in opulence. This is the meaning of simultaneously difference from the Supreme Lord and oneness with him. So as we said, you know, the Lord maintains his position as always being superior, and at the same time he allows us to enjoy equal opulence and equal status with him. As if one and different can be there at the same time. There we go at the time. 5:18. My goodness, really? Okay. Let's leave it there. Yeah, people are leaving. They're leaving in their throngs. No, that's okay. Thank you. We've gone over time anyway. I didn't even notice. My goodness, what have I done? Broken religious principles. Okay, let's take up this, you know, one nice discussion with Prahlad Maharaj, pure devotional service next week. Hare Krishna.